Let's turn our attention to the city of Bryan, and Jason Bianski joins us this morning. How are you today?
Good morning, Scott. Doing well.
Let's talk, I guess, first of all, about bus service, simply because that's something that we talked about 2 weeks ago, and I know that was you did have that yesterday in your workshop session. I want to play. You were here 2 weeks ago, and I want to play what your thoughts were at this point. And I ahead of this, I want to say, and I think you said in the longest form of your answer, that while Brazos Transit does impact a facet of this community, basically it's something that doesn't come to the attention until something happens. In this case, it happened to be that they asked for money. But this is kind of a summation of one of the comments that you made when we talked 2 weeks ago.
I would say majority of the people that I talked to were against spending those kind of dollars on transportation when very little is collected from the users. And there's a lot of folks that are of the opinion that it's not run properly to begin with. I am not an expert on transportation. I'm not an expert on Brazos Transit. We did receive some information from them last night. I know they're a large entity here that's based in Bryan College Station here. But, I think 95% of their funds are taxpayer dollars. So.
And they run empty a lot. And that's what you said 2 weeks ago. What do you say differently after you've had the presentation from the folks at Brazos Transit?
Well, let me say, first off, Scott, in talking with John McBeth and the chairman of the board, Marvin Tate, they're not asking us for an additional $700,000. They're telling us if we want these buses ran after hours or on weekends, it's going to cost us an additional $700,000 minimum. And I asked point blank to Mr. McBeth yesterday at the workshop meeting, would it be cost effective to run the buses after hours for the dollars that we would spend our tax dollars? And he said, absolutely not. Not at this point. Ridership goes down after 6 o'clock. They gave us a chart from 5 a.m. to 6 p.m. And majority of it's used probably between that 4 and 6 and that and 5 and 9. But it's used quite a bit during the day for doctor's visits and those sorts of things. But so at this point, I wouldn't be in favor of extending those hours for the dollars it's going to cost. I mean, we have just a limited amount of funds. Are we better served by using those funds for something else, for infrastructure improvements? Are we better off putting those? They may limit a few. He was joking about it, and I think San Antonio and some other area received a big grant and put some money into some additional transportation routes. And I think one of our state senators commented that for the few people that were taking advantage of it, you could probably buy them each a Lexus for what it was costing the taxpayers. So John McBeth does a good job at Brazos Transit. He's been there a long time, and he was had a meeting with the head of appropriations, Representative Otto, here just a few days ago. So, he understands that he wants to spend those dollars wisely, and I appreciate his honest comments and remarks on those services. If the need changes, that's something we'll look at. I think there may be some other things we can do with Brazos Transit. Maybe we, instead of running those routes on an hourly basis, maybe they're ran every on a 30-minute basis. That might be more advantageous to the citizens of Bryan College Station.
Well, and again, this is two guys talking who are not transportation experts, and I'll say that right up front. And this is a question that probably I need to ask John McBeth, and we'll endeavor to have John come on the program to talk about this as we move down the road. But it seems counterintuitive to me. Why are they buying larger buses than they have now if their ridership is down? Was that question asked?
No, the question wasn't asked. I think they're looking at it, and maybe they're looking at consolidating some routes. I know they're going to extend some routes into South College Station. They're also going to be addressing some of the growing population on the west side of Bryan, particularly with the Health Science Center and the new Blinn College campus. So might be a good opportunity to bring in Mr. McBeth from Brazos Transit. Like I said, I don't want to speak on his behalf. It was interesting to see how they operate. It was very interesting to see how A&M operates. And, I am glad that the two communities and Texas University and the two transit systems are working together. And you and I can ride on those A&M buses, and we can get a pass ride on the Brazos Transit system. But, so there is a need, I think, in South College Station right now with folks that are wanting to that live out there that want to work on campus. And so I think it's a matter of marketing and advertising, letting people know that that you can ride those A&M buses.
Yeah.
I mean, they're running all the way into Blinn College. It was amazing to see the map that they gave us, Scott, where all the students live in Bryan and College Station and the routes that they take. But they're everywhere.
Yeah, they are. Well, that's the thing. And we see it more actually in College Station now because they continue to have super high-density areas. But the time is going to come when Bryan will have some high-density areas and those students will be, you know, what that map looks like today and what it looks like 6 years from now, I think, could be very dramatic. I do, and I would urge people, if they want to know more about this, I think the while it was certainly slanted to show it from the standpoint,
I'm going to turn that off.
While it was slanted to the standpoint that there was the presentation that Mr. McBeth wanted to show, you learned a lot about Brazos Transit in what he said yesterday in the workshop session, I think. And he had a good PowerPoint that showed a lot of the... Well, again, it's the federal government also getting into this stuff, and that's, we understand, as you had told us when you were here 2 weeks ago, 95% of their funding comes from taxes, and so with that comes strings. It's not the days when you could simply take the funding and go do what you needed to. There are ADA considerations, and there are lots of other things, but I would recommend folks look at the presentation he did at Bryan Workshop, and he'll probably do the same thing at College Station Workshop at some point in the future, but I think they learn a lot more about that.
Absolutely.
Let's turn our attention now to zoning, and this was something that actually had been talked about again a couple of weeks ago, and the idea that there were people who wanted to at least be advised when there were going to be changes that would take place in zoning in their neighborhoods, and so they would be able to come to council and speak about it, but the supermajority was defeated.
Well, Scott, this is a different version that we looked at yesterday's meeting than what we looked at 2 weeks ago. I was somewhat supportive on the last version. It was the kinder, gentler version that I thought was beneficial to all sides, more so than the version we're looking at today. Previous version, it was about notification up to 500 feet. Again, notification. The current version that was voted down last night was more in-depth than just notification. It also allowed you to, within 500 feet, to protest particular projects. Before, it was 200 feet. That's state law. That's what a majority of the cities in the state of Texas operate by, but they wanted to add an extra 300 feet of notification so more people would know about a project, and I'm fine with that. But now this was changed to protesting within 500 feet, which changes the percentages and changes the whole scenario. We did have a gentleman last night that spoke, and he said if he went with the 500 feet, his competition on his development could then appeal his zoning change.
Sure.
And there were two council members that voted against it, even though the neighborhood association and the residents and the folks that had appealed it had agreed with the developer. They actually worked it out, but there were still votes against it for various reasons, other reasons. But his deal would have been denied,
right,
under this scenario. So it was a very valid point. When we talk about a supermajority, that means six of the seven council members have to agree. You know, if supermajority is great, then maybe we need to go to a supermajority on all our votes. So if we're going to build new swimming pools and we're going to approve budgets and we're going to talk about this and talk about that, six or seven have to agree. It would be pretty difficult sometimes. We're all elected by a majority vote. Government functions on the majority rule. Very rarely is it anything above and beyond that. Even our neighborhood associations, HOAs, I think they operate by a 66% rule. Our neighborhood conservation districts are 66% of the population. So supermajority is pretty... pretty restrictive there, and I do think it would have a bearing and an impact on the way Bryan develops in the future.
Jason Bieske joining us this morning. Also in a workshop yesterday, presentation having to do with guidelines to be put in place for companies like Uber, and if people are familiar with that, basically Uber Lite is here in Bryan College Station as opposed to what they have in larger cities, idea where you can use an internet connection to find someone who will take you from where you are to where you want to be. That has made a big impact on all the taxi companies, certainly in every city where they are. But this is something now the city of Bryan's starting to address. So I'd like to get your thoughts on what you heard.
Absolutely. Let me pause Uber for just 2 seconds.
Sure.
And make one more statement about the zoning changes.
Yeah, yeah.
We did talk about our comprehensive plan. We are in the process of updating our comprehensive plan in talking with the neighborhood associations and talking with the developers and builders, I think all of these issues and concerns can be alleviated in the updated comprehensive plan. That way the developers know they have a concrete definition of what needs to go here, what can go here, what's accepted here, and everyone has an input in it, and then we don't have to worry about conditional use permits that right now it's an outdated old plan, and so you have some conditional use permits that are being granted and some variances there. So as we update the comprehensive plan, I think a lot of these concerns will be alleviated.
Well, and again, and I want to say it one more time because I've said it before, the part of this responsibility is with the citizenry of a city. You have to see what your Planning and Zoning Commission is looking at. You have to see after they take action, then they'll take it over to council. But you need to at least be aware of that. If you have an 11th-hour effort to stop something that has been planned and platted for quite a while, part of that responsibility is on you as citizens, I think. It's just it's part of being a citizen. Okay, let's take our attention over to the Ubers.
But we did pass a motion last night to postpone any action on this transportation ordinance until after the legislative session. I'm hearing from Austin that they're addressing this Uber issue and these taxicab issues and the vehicle for hire, I think is what they call it, circumstances. But this day and age, technology's changing and the times are changing, and so you've got a new way of doing business, and Uber and some of the other companies are in that market, and yet they're not regulated the same as maybe the taxicabs and pedicabs and horse-drawn carriages are regulated. So that's something we're looking at. I've learned a lot about the vehicle for hire and all that's involved, but I know it's very competitive. But, again, whatever the state does will trump anything the city does. So I was told that there's probably a 70-plus percent chance that something will happen. I think there's probably two dozen lobbyists in Austin working on this issue from both sides mm-hmm. of the aisle. So I think we'll see something probably come out of the House and the Senate in Austin in the next couple of months. And if not, then it's something the city will go back and address at a later date.
Did you hear from a representative of Uber?
Yes, there were several representatives there from Uber.
Mm-hmm. Was it corporate or was it people who were drivers who were here?
It was both. I think there was one driver, one supervisor, and I think one lobbyist. And their biggest concerns, insurance concerns, background checks, their biggest concern was privacy concerns and the safety of their drivers. They're worried that if the list of their drivers is out and you don't like Uber, that you may go after the folks or something. So they've had that issue in the past. Again, very competitive business. And then the trade dressing, the magnets on the side of the cars, Uber, they run their vehicles without any identification for most people to see. I mean, if you dial up the application, it'll tell you who the driver is, what they look like, the car, the make, the license plate. You've got all that information as a customer, but they're not going to have a big neon light on top or a magnet on the side, and because they don't stop for hailing passengers. Mm-hmm. So if you want to try to hail a cab, that's not the business that they're in. So if they were afraid if they had magnets on the side of the cars, they'd be driving by people and people would be mad that they didn't stop. And, it's a different type of service. But if they don't get it figured out in Austin, I think we'll get it figured out. And some of the cities are looking at it. I know College Station's considering an updated ordinance also.
Sure. Anything else?
Yes, Scott. I want to mention quite a few things that are going on in the City of Bryan. Our new 2015 Spring and Summer Activity Guide is hot off the presses, and on March 28th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we have breakfast with the bunny at the Neal Recreation Center. Have breakfast with the Easter Bunny, take pictures, crafts. So I'm sure Councilmember Condola and his family and my family and some of the young ones on the council.
That'd be enough right there, wouldn't it?
That'd do it. But I'm sure Councilmember Condola is out at the family camp out because I know he likes to camp. So April 11th through the 12th from 3 p.m. to 9 a.m. the next morning at Austin's County Park. This is a longstanding tradition in Bryan. You have family camp out. If you don't have a tent, they'll rent you a tent, bring your sleeping bags, It's a lot of fun and games for the family, stargazing, campfire stories. They've got a featured movie. Hopefully the weather holds out. It's not a monsoon, but it's a great time.
Now, that's the longstanding tradition, is always brings rain. We don't need it now.
You're talking about Texas Reds, or you talk about
family yeah, camp both out? Of them, right?
See, yeah. We do things in Briar that bring rain, so we just got to figure out a way to make some dollars on it for the taxpayers. And finally, on April 25th, at the BRAC, Bryan Regional Athletic Complex, we have the pitch, hit, and run competition. It's a Major League Baseball pitch, hit, and run. It's free. It's a one-day event for boys and girls ages 7 to 14. Participants compete by showing off their skills and the chance to advance possibly all the way to nationals and a chance to actually perform on a Major League Baseball All-Star Game field. So a lot of good things going on. But, again, all of this is mentioned in our 2015 Spring and Summer Activity Guide that's out and about in the community and in the mail. So look forward to those events.
All right, very good. Thanks for the time this morning.
Thank you, Scott.
Yep, that's Jason Bianski, the mayor of Bryan. We visit with the mayors on alternate Wednesdays.